When someone asks you, when building a sustainable business, what is the most important metric that matters? In all likelihood, the answer to that question is retention. Well, in today's episode of The Growth Equation, we actually got to bring on Andrew, who heads up Business Intelligence for Hotjar. He also runs a really successful podcast specializing in churn. So we had a really great conversation around understanding churn and retention within your business. What are the metrics that you should be looking at? How do you manage churn in the right way? What are the best practices you should be implementing? And we talked a lot about what are some of the biggest pitfalls that companies make when it comes to churn. So we had a really awesome conversation about what teams should own churn overall. And I'm really excited to bring him on to the podcast. So let's get started.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the Growth Equation podcast. Thanks for coming on today.
It's a pleasure, Greg. Thanks for having me.
How are things going on your end?
I guess pretty much the same as everybody else around the world, patiently waiting, and hopefully this pandemic that we're dealing with now can sort of be resolved as fast as possible. But I'm out, so I mentioned to you, I'm out in Cyprus, and we've just gone under full lockdown. So just enjoying the time as well at home now, being able to relax a little bit with the family. So yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting time. And, you know, hopefully we can, as people are kind of sitting at home, we can have a really good episode and conversation today that some of our listeners can enjoy during this time off.
Absolutely.
So to jump right into things, maybe I think the best way to help out the listeners, and maybe just kind of tell me a little bit about yourself, and we can kind of go from there.
Cool. Yeah, so obviously I've introduced myself. I'm Andrew Michael. I currently work at Hotjar, and I head up the business intelligence team for them there. Hotjar is a behavioral analytics suite of tools where we offer feedback and analytics solutions like heat maps and session recordings. And prior to Hotjar, I founded four different startups, managed to sell a couple of those companies, not for much money, but managed to get exits out of them. And the reason being was churn and retention was like a big killer. So I'm also now the host of a podcast called Churn FM, where I really want to try and dive in and understand the problem from inside out. I was tired of reading blog posts where we discover this magic number and we solve churn for our company, which is absolute bullshit. It's really such a nuanced problem that's impacted by so many different factors and different stages of growth and different industries, that I really wanted to sort of create this podcast for people to understand that it's much bigger than just a number, and how you can sort of tackle it at the different stages and your different roles and where you are. So that's me.
Awesome. And I think just one like quick follow-up question to that is, like, based on all of your background and your passion when it comes to specifically around like retention and churn, like, what have you seen like the biggest downfall at companies that either you've talked with in the podcast or through like some of your different work experiences that you've seen before, that they're doing really well or they're not doing or they should be doing?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing I see that people are doing wrong when it comes to churn itself is they leave it too late, and they always push it back, because I think in early stage, if you're seeing really good growth, it's easy to mask the problem with the growth itself. And I think this is probably one of the biggest mistakes that companies make, is not paying enough attention to it early on, not really focusing on things like their onboarding and user education, and really trying to maximize the value that the users get to begin with. And then they end up sort of one day having this, oh shit moment, like, we really need to fix this problem now, it's grown out of proportion. And for me, I think like the quickest and easiest way for somebody to realize when this is going to be a problem for them is to do a growth ceiling exercise, where you take your current churn rate with your current growth rate, and you can like put it on a graph, and you can see at which point your company will stop growing due to the current churn rate if you don't change anything else in the business. And then that really normally gives you, like, in terms of months, how many months you have until like you really need to start thinking about making changes. And often than not, that's sort of like a wake-up call within companies. And they say, okay, now we really need to focus on churn, because we can continue to grow. But if we just putting fuel in the fire and we're losing that through a leaky bucket, it's going to end up costing the company a lot of money and a lot of time and pain.
And for anyone listening out there, say they've identified and they've seen that, like, hey, churn's an working on churn is an opportunity for their business. Like, how would they go about like starting to fix that? Like, where do they even start first? Is it just like throwing a bunch of ideas at the wall? Is it like talking to customers? Is it like starting on your onboarding experience? Like, where would you recommend people start first?
Just to backtrack one thing, I think like with churn and retention, I think definitely the biggest growth lever you can pull is retention in any business. And I think this is like very misunderstood to begin with, but I think if you want to really, really grow, the stronger the retention you have, the faster you're going to grow, and you'll actually see exponential growth as a result. And also, like, typically in subscription businesses, at least 40% of your business is coming from word of mouth. So the longer you're keeping your customers around, the more opportunity you have for them to speak and tell others. And then it's just a compounding effect. But when it comes to where to get started with general retention, this is actually a question I ask every guest that joins the show. And it's normally one of the closing questions. And the question goes sort of like this. It's like, if you had to arrive at a new company and general retention wasn't great, and you've been tasked now by the CEO to try and turn things around for the company, what would you want to do in the first 90 days to make an impact and show a difference? And a lot of the guests and the more experienced guests will come back and say, well, 90 days is not enough. And you'd need to go back to the CEO and let them know that this is not a problem that's solved overnight. And it's a methodic process that requires like the whole company to come together to make changes. But every one of them as well then goes back to qualitative feedback and really trying to understand where the problem lies. Is it a positioning problem and people just don't understand the product? And when they arrive, there's a miscommunication between what marketing is promising and what the product is delivering. It could be that potentially you don't have the right customers coming in and you're attracting the wrong types of people. It could be pricing. So really like just trying to get that qualitative feedback from customers. Are you missing features? Is the software buggy? Like really going out and speaking to as many, many people as possible, doing your churn survey. So reaching out to customers that have recently churned, understand their reasons, speaking to customers that have been retained the longest, trying to understand like what is driving their success. And then from there, you should be able to pull out a really long bucket list of things that you can start to work on and experiment with. But I think ultimately it really, really starts with speaking to the customers and really trying to understand their problem inside and out so you can show that you're delivering value to them.
Is there like industry standard of like what a good like retention rate or churn rate would be like overall? Or is it like, is it the answer? Like it really depends based on the business that you have in front of you.
Yeah, the answer is it really depends on the business you have in front of you. There's just so many factors that influence it. And it could be the market that you're going after, SMB versus enterprise. Like SMB is always going to have a higher churn rate just due to the nature of the businesses going under and finances. And with the enterprise companies, like typically you have bigger contract sizes, but it's normally like set and forget and then they're gone. It could be depending if you're in the gaming industry, if you're in social media, like there's just so many factors that influence churn and retention. And there isn't really an industry standard of what is a good churn rate. It's really totally up to your business and trying to understand what it is. And I think one of a good exercises that came up on a podcast actually was like when you look at churn and retention and the numbers that you have and trying to figure out sort of the most important thing is maybe trying to figure out what's in your control and what's not in your control. And then understanding from there, like how you should be working to improve retention, because depending on your industry and if you're doing churn surveys, you'll see things like gone out of business or prices too expensive or the company is no longer in need of these. Like I don't have a project for your service anymore. And there's certain definitely reasons why people churn that are out of your company's control. And there's obviously a lot that are in their control. So if you have a good grasp and understanding like what you can fix and what you can't, then that gives you a much clearer picture of like how you can go about setting targets for what churn and retention should be. And I think it was actually from Aurora Pulse did this quite early on. And they realized, like Emmerik, the CEO, they realized what was in their control. And they did a fantastic job of then of just doubling down on the areas where they could improve and setting targets for the company that were realistic. Because obviously, ultimately, they focus on SMBs and there was always going to be a certain amount of churn that was just not possible for them to solve. They can't keep other companies in business. So.
And I think one follow-up question you just kind of gave me a thought on is like, when you think about just like churn and retention, like what team owns this, or is it multiple teams on this, right? Is this like is this a marketing thing? Is this a product thing? Is this sales or customer success? Like who do you think owns what?
Yeah, this is probably one of the questions I hate the most because I think in terms of ownership, if you think about it, like you have a subscription business. So people subscribe to your company and if they don't subscribe and they end up churning, you don't have a business. So ultimately, like this is the company's metric that the company should own because it's the single most important metric for the company if they're building a subscription business. And a lot of the times this comes up and like definitely customer success is probably one of the most like important teams when it comes to retention. And then normally within companies are the ones that are the owners of this metric. In my point of view, I think this is definitely a mistake because when it comes to churn and retention, like these are output metrics. And this is like a whole bunch of inputs go into the end result and a whole bunch of inputs that are outside of the control of customer success. So if customers are churning because there is a missing feature or there's a bug, that the ownership there is really on product, and product needs to be making and fixing those changes. If there's a lot of churn happening because there's the wrong type of leads, that's marketing's problem for attracting the wrong kind of customers. Again, it could be a sales issue where sales are really also forcing and aiming for the close as opposed to really trying to close customers that are going to be around for the long term. So it really requires a team ownership. And if anyone needs to own it, it needs to be the CEO. And they need to be able to coordinate and give ownership to the individual teams of the input metrics that they control. So a really good episode recently was with Ziv Pellet from AppsFlyer. And at AppsFlyer, what they do is they have in customer success, they own two metrics, which is within their control, which are input metrics that impact churn. So the first one is expansion. So they focus on trying to help their customers grow and at the time of renewal. And the way they do that is by pushing them and helping them to get more value out of the product. So the focus is on value, but ultimately it comes back in expansion revenue. And then the second thing they have is feature adoption. So they obviously realize really early on that the more features that the customers adopt, the more likely they are to be retained. And then it's within the customer successes focus then to try and increase feature adoption when they're speaking to customers on their quarterly reviews and really trying to unlock new features for customers, ultimately reducing churn. And then within the organization, and then they're all within the product teams and sales and marketing, they all have goals that really trying to reflect that increase in retention and keeping in mind that if you have a subscription business and you're losing customers, you have a risk of not having a subscription business. So it's really, really important that this is something that's owned by the company and not by one individual team.
And I think that totally makes sense, right? As you talked about like retention, like as an output metric. I think the one follow-up question I have to that is like, is there like just common things that you have seen either through your experiences or through talking to different people on the podcast around the pitfalls of why churn is happening? Like as an example, it's like the onboarding isn't good enough within the product experience, or the CS team, the customer success team is focused on the wrong things. Like, have you seen these common pitfalls that are pretty consistent that like are like, here are the three or four things from like to try to focus on trying to drive like strong engagement and retention of your customers is X, or does it really depend on like the company?
Yeah. So I think there's definitely trends. They'll depend on the company for sure. But probably the three biggest areas, and I think first is sort of just trying to understand what the reason for churn is. Is it voluntary? Did a customer on their own accord decide to churn, or is it involuntary churn? So I think one area, and I'd say this is something that's a low-hanging fruit, is going to return some results, but is definitely not the biggest by a long way, is delinquent churn. So when a customer's credit card fails or there's a reason that they it was outside of their control and they ended up churning. And a lot of times, like if you think about your customer base and you have credit cards, on average, the average credit card expires every 2 years. So every month, you'd have a certain portion of your customers whose credit cards have now expired and the potential to churn, not because they want to, but just due to the nature of the way credit cards work. So I think delinquent churn is one area. But then by far, the two biggest areas when it comes to churn and the reasons that people always give, and I've seen from my own experience, is bad onboarding. So customers never really establish that habit and never really get to understand how to use the product and get value out of it. And by that, I mean, as well, is really trying to ensure that people just come to you, not only just to get the value once and to get that aha moment that everybody talks about, but to be getting that aha moment consistently. And that's what onboarding is all about. It's really about getting your customers to that point that they're consistently getting value out of your tool or service. And that's when you could say it's finished. But I don't think onboarding is ever finished. And then the second thing is when customer champions leave. So depending on your company and annual contract value that you have with your customers, the next biggest I'd say is probably when the customer champion leaves. So somebody at some point in time was at your customer's company and they decided that your service was the one. They managed to get budget approvals. They convinced the team and they bought it in and they got it going. Typically what happens then is when that person leaves, that person is more likely going to be replaced by somebody else who has their preference and their tool stack. And they're going out and they're going to try and get a budget approval to switch out tools. Or their case is nobody knows how to use a tool because that was the only person, the champion internally. So this is a problem, but it's also an opportunity. So the problem is that, okay, now this company needs to try and understand who is the next best person to speak to. Most companies are solving this by ensuring that they have three or four contacts within the same company when they're onboarding customers, and customer success is normally responsible for this. But then also the opportunity is that person's leaving. They were happy with your tool or service before. They're not going to disappear into thin air. They're going to go to another company, and that's a great opportunity for sales. And I think this is a very big problem, because the average tenure in a software business is around 2 years. If you look at like Silicon Valley, it's probably more like 18 months. So this is happening frequently as well. And you tend to see a lot of companies where this is a big problem for churn, but it also is a big positive on the flip side when it brings in new business when they go to new companies. So those are definitely like the three areas, of which like the two other definitely are the biggest, is onboarding and customers never really establishing that value, and then the customer champion leaving.
And then I think on just on one of those, if you want to talk about specifically around like onboarding for a second here, you know, I think, you know, people have a pretty good sense of like understanding, like, okay, you create a seamless experience to get that customer to experience the aha moment. And I think the question I would have for that is like, what have you seen like companies do pretty poorly when it comes to like onboarding or like trying to get customers to experience that aha moment? Like, are there things, or are there watches they should consider, or like best practices they should be following?
So I think one of the biggest mistakes like I see happening is, I don't know where this came about, but it was all about like trying to get your customer as fast as possible to that aha moment. And this, sometimes we cut out necessary steps and we like misunderstand what we really need to achieve with the customer when it comes to onboarding. In some cases, adding friction to your onboarding can actually be a really powerful moment. And I think this is one thing, Segment themselves, what they realized was in the early days, they were just trying to onboard customers as fast as possible and trying to get them set up and running. And they have a product which is an analytics product, which helps you to track different events and send it to all your downstream tools. And it's critical to get your event set up right from the beginning. And it's not something that's really simple to do. And if you leave customers to their own accord, what they found was that they would set up the incorrectly. People would give different naming conventions, and then customers, like internally within their company, would say, "Well, we can't trust the data that is wrong," and then end up losing that customer as a result. So, one thing they introduced was, which would be against like common wisdom that people preach about, but was actually adding a layer of friction so that when a customer onboarded, they weren't allowed to get started until they had set up a tracking plan with the customer success manager to ensure that they had got the right setup. So, what I mean by this, I think the biggest mistake people make is really like, okay, let's remove all friction. Let's get everything. Let's remove this field. Let's do this. And what they're missing, the point is really like you need to get people and educate them to ensure that they know how to use your tool through onboarding. And onboarding is one of those moments in time. It's probably the most attention you're ever going to get from your customers. Like, is that first hour or so once they've signed up for your product, first 15 minutes. And then you've lost their attention. So if you try to rush too fast to get them into the product and try to get them to the moment that they don't realize and how to continue and how to consistently get value, I think you've lost. And it's really important that you maximize that time. There are definitely going to be customers that just want to get on and get running with it, and that's fine. And you can create an onboarding that caters for customers like that. But really trying not to rush the onboarding and making sure that you're maximizing the time to ensuring that you're educating your customers so that they can get the value of the product that they came to you for.
And I think one other question after that is, I've noticed like talking to some companies, like one thing that they don't realize is they think like, oh, if they churn, like we could build a resurrection campaign to bring them back. I'd love to get your perspective on like, how easy is it to like, to re-engage people that have churned and to like build like resurrection campaigns to like build them back, like back in your product? Or have you like completely lost them at that point? Or can you be successful doing those types of things?
So, I mean, I can ask you the question. Have you ever used a tool or service and then received an email and gone back to using that tool or service? Like consciously making a decision that you weren't happy with it, that it didn't fit your needs anymore, and then going and actively canceling it and then coming back to it? Like, I don't know many people that do. Not to say that it doesn't work, and there's definitely ways that people work on this, but I think you're much, much better off focusing your efforts on customers that have just arrived, that are excited, that want to use the product, and making sure that you focus on onboarding. And then resurrection is really something that you can come into and focus on when you don't have any more ideas, or you've run out of ways to improve the onboarding or ways to improve engagement within the product. Resurrection is possible, but it's definitely very, very hard to achieve because of the psychology of the user. And I think what's very important to understand is when we work on products and we building new features or we're working on onboarding or resurrection campaigns is taking into consideration that we're working with people and we're not just building software. At the end of the day, like we need to focus on the emotions that we can control and how we can work with our customers at their moments in time. And definitely resurrection is a hard, hard place to be working from.
And then just kind of switching gears now and just talking about, obviously you're over at like Hotjar right now and you're kind of heading up and helping to run like the business intelligence team there. I'd love to understand like what specifically from your perspective are from a business intelligence perspective at Hotjar, like what do you, maybe you can explain to the listeners like what are the things you're working on and how are you thinking about within like retention and churn within Hotjar?
Yeah. So at Hotjar, I've had quite a few different roles and just due to the nature of being an entrepreneur previously, one thing happened, it was about almost 12 months ago now, we got to a point in time where we had no trust in our data internally. It was quite ironic for an analytics company that we didn't trust the data we had ourselves. And we had that same problem I described earlier that Segment had, where initially people were creating events and then there was no sort of central team focused on metrics or analytics for the company. And what ended up happening was it became a free-for-all where everybody added their own info and then eventually people lost trust in the data and we weren't making decisions. So our first phase for the team was just really literally myself going on and saying, okay, let's fix this. Let's put together a proof of concept and let's try and sort of solve some of the main challenges we had with data within the company. And obviously, one big challenge being like a SaaS business, none of the tools we were really using had was enabling us to get the metrics we needed at the account user level and being able to see both of those views. So we needed to solve that. And then we needed to solve sort of this data trust issue. So we elected to actually do a fresh, clean start of our data and set up a new setup. And we went with Segment itself because that enabled us to get consistency across all our different downstream tools. We collect data once with Segment and then Segment sends it to all our tools. So initially that was it. And then from there, like data requests just started pouring in and we said, okay, now we need a team. So I think today we now have 7 people in the team. We're 3 analysts, 2 data engineers and myself, that's 6. And we obviously actively hiring for different roles now within business intelligence. And really our focus now is trying to help the company understand what they can be working on next with the data that we consume. So we've worked on various different projects, whether it be combining our NPS results with churn data. We're looking at different sort of retention studies and what's driving retention within the company. We're working with marketing to help understand sort of LTV and CAC by channel, and then also where they can be better investing their energy and time. We introduce attribution models now, so we can take a look and understand the different performance when it comes to marketing by channel. So we really like covering all bases. And because we started late as a team, Hotjar is now 5 years old, and we're only really now doubling down on data. There's just obviously, as you can understand, there's like a multitude of problems that need to be solved. So from a data engineering perspective, really just putting together a robust data warehouse that we can then actually query and run these queries with our analysts and build out different dashboards for the teams. And we've also introduced a very, very heavy experimentation culture now. So our job is really about helping the different teams within the company understand how their experiments are impacting the business. And ultimately, the goal is then to be providing intelligence for teams to give them the guidance of what they could be working on next. And finally, like what we want to be doing as well then is seeing how we can take an advantage and leverage the data that we are ingesting to help our customers further as well. Whether it be looking at machine learning models on the data we ingest to provide insights and tips that they can be working to improve their products.
And this is basically like a function that like Hotjar didn't have before, is that correct?
Yes.
And I guess the one quick follow-up question I have to that is, how has the team that ultimately like you're leading, like how have you found like working with the different the cross-functional teams and like internally? Was that something that those teams were open to? And like you're more about like giving them the automation and the tools in front of them, or are you really helping them to be like a value-add partner to help them look at the data, analyze the data in the right way?
Yeah, definitely the latter. I think this was sort of by design how we've set up as a company, and we did a restructuring probably about 12 months ago as well, and really tried to structure the company along the user journey. So we have an activation squad who focuses on activating customers, which would be a mix of marketing, product, customer success. We have a revenue squad who obviously their goal there is on pricing and packaging and really trying to optimize our pricing for our customers so they can get maximum value out of our tool. We have an engage and retain squads, like really focused obviously on engagement and retention. And then through that, like as a business intelligence team, we serve these different squads within the company with guidance and obviously helping. So the end result, what we're working towards is having an analyst embedded within each one of the squads who becomes a domain matter expert that works directly with product management, with product design, with marketing, so they can all understand their customers better and the data we ingest better to make better decisions.
And would you say like those specific squads that you just mentioned, are they more focused on like, hey, here's the problem we're trying to solve for, and then you build a cross-functional team around that to try to solve that?
Yes.
Awesome. And then I think just kind of switching gears again, would love just to like kind of hear some of the, I know that you were mentioning earlier, like the podcast that you run specifically, would love to hear some of the, you know, what was the reason for you to start this specific podcast, you know, that you're focusing on talking about churn? Has it been like a passion project of yours? What was this like something that you had felt like there wasn't enough people talking about these types of things? Would love to hear why you started it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I mentioned it a little bit earlier is myself having built four different companies before and managing to sell a couple, but not for much money because churn was one of the biggest problems there. Also joining Hotjar, like early, was a big advocate saying, okay, we need to start focusing on this early. And then just like the content that I was going out and consuming and reading and trying to learn about the topic was either very sort of high level that's never really got to any details and never really provided much value. Or it was one of these blog posts where it's like, we discovered this magic number, the silver bullet for churn. And it really just started annoying me reading all this content that there was no really value to it. And that people were sort of misleading people as well, understanding how big this problem is and how differently like companies are solving this problem. So that was really the motivation. It was really, I wanted to learn this problem inside out. It had hurt me before. Like I was working in a company now where we could see that there were signs that it could be hurting us. Luckily, we managed to turn that around quite a bit. But obviously, like churn and retention in a subscription business is like the most vital metric, I think, that you could be focusing on, considering that it's your lifeline. If people are churning, you don't have a business. So I really wanted to understand that inside out. It was selfish as well. Like, I guess from a learning perspective, it's been a fantastic learning experience. We've now going into our first anniversary next week. We've had some amazing guests, like top in SaaS for sure.
Awesome. One quick follow-up question to that is, you know, out of all of these guests that you've had on through the podcast, what's been like a couple of like maybe the best like things that you learned from? You talked a lot about like, oh, I had a great opportunity to learn a lot from those guests. Like, if you saw maybe a couple of themes that you've seen specifically across churn.
That's a tough question. This is actually something I'm working on at the moment now, is really trying to pull together all the different learnings. And I think like a lot of it we've been discussing today is really sort of that understanding like where the biggest areas are, being onboarding and being customer champion leaving, like looking at sort of the challenges and the way companies are organizing this and trying to solve for it. So which team owns it, who should be the owner. I think these are some of the things that I've learned from the guests that are doing it really, really well, is just understanding that it is like a company challenge. Like there needs to be alignment from the top down. If you're going to go about solving for it, you need to have metrics and goals for each team that are aligned, that aren't contradicting and competing. It's critical in order to sort of have this alignment and have this focus in order to be actually win when it comes to churn and retention. And I mean, there's been a lot of like little nuggets of gold going through it, but I'd say those are like the three, four biggest areas that have really like shone some new light on the problem for me as well. And then obviously like the biggest thing being that there is no silver bullet to solving churn. And it is such a nuanced problem that it's being solved in so many different ways by so many different companies that it's like really up to you to understand your type of business, understand like who's closest to you. And then those are the people you need to be listening to and learning from that are doing a good job, because not every business and not every solution and not every best practice that you read or hear is going to be good for your business.
And then I think one of the last questions I had right here was just around, you know, probably selfishly, is like from launching and running a podcast now, what has been some of the biggest learning you've learned from like running a podcast?
Yeah, I'd say definitely the number one is growth is slow. It took really, really long time to get to where we are today. But I think once you do start getting some traction, then you sort of see the snowball effect, which is amazing and exciting. So early days, I really had to spend a lot of time trying to source guests and reach out and Now it's the inverse, where guests are reaching out and PR teams are trying to get people on the show. And it really has like taken its time, but it's definitely been very, very worthwhile. Like, the learning has been amazing. Like, also selfishly being able to use like a lot of these interviews with questions that I came up during interviews with challenges we're facing at Hotjar as well. So really trying to help them sort of feed that information back into the company. And it's just been a fantastic experience overall. And I think from a network perspective, it's also been excellent to get an hour with some of the top SaaS professionals in the world and be able to ask them any question you want has been an amazing experience. So in terms of like podcasting as a whole, like, it's definitely a long game. It definitely takes time to sort of build up an audience, to build up a network. But then once you get there, you sort of get a snowball effect where people come to you, like listeners growing day by day. And the one thing I deliberately chose not to do was to monetize the podcast, but like definitely see, like, since the podcast has been growing, I'm getting like 2-3 requests a month now to monetize it. So if that's your goal, like, it does take time, but when you get there, they come through, and they come through nicely as well. So yeah, I just say, like, keep at it every day, keep consistent. I mean, we now be 55 episodes next week, I think, and was literally an episode every single Wednesday for the last year. So consistency is key.
Awesome. I think just to kind of sum things up, you know, now's our chance to, like, this has been an amazing episode so far. How could listeners, you know, they're listening to this, come and find you, you know, if that's through the podcast or if that's through reaching out to you personally?
Yeah. So I'm always happy to chat to people. Like, you can find me on LinkedIn or Twitter. So just shoot a PM and I'll be happy to have a chat. And obviously then Churn FM. So it's churn.fm is the website. You can check it out. I don't know when this podcast will be aired, but we'll have a new website out next week as well. There's obviously an inquiry form there and a suggest a guest if you have anyone in mind that you think we should be speaking to. But I'm always happy to speak to anybody who wants to chat about the challenge and see how they can help their company. So.
For anyone who's listening, I've had a chance to listen to the podcast. I'd highly recommend anyone having listened to that. It's a really great podcast if you really want to understand churn and retention overall. So just with that, just wanted to say thanks again for coming on the Growth Equation podcast. I think our listeners are going to have a really great episode to learn more about churn. And again, Andrew, thanks for coming on.
It's a pleasure, Greg. Thanks so much for the invite.